Okay, let's turn to Acts chapter 3, verse 19 to start off. And actually, by way of review from last week, there are two things that we're actually focusing in on when we talk about the fulfillment prophetically of the Feast of Tabernacles. And both things are mentioned in Acts chapter 3, verse 19. So, somebody get that and read that? Okay, so he mentions two things there, the times of refreshing, and the times of refreshing are in relation to the fact of when the Lord returns. And we looked at the presence of the Lord last week, and specifically in terms of what that meant, particularly as he will be sitting on that throne in that temple that will be on the earth, and basically pretty much in terms of an accomplished redemption for the children of Israel. So we saw that in the cherubim in connection with that as well that surround that throne. Today, we want to take a look at the times of refreshing and what that will actually mean for the nation, okay, in the Messianic Kingdom that the Lord will establish at his return. Now, experience that Israel will have one day is referred to in Matthew 19, verse 28. Okay, there he mentions, uses the term regeneration. Okay, it's a time the word regeneration means to be like a redoing, okay? And everything will pretty much be remade, particularly as far as Israel is concerned, concerning basically three things. Herself as a people, her land, and even the animal creation that will be in that land. Let's take a look at those three areas in which they will experience this regeneration. Concerning the land, let's look at Isaiah chapter 35. Isaiah chapter 35, and somebody read the first couple of verses. Isaiah 35, verses 1 and 2.
It shall blossom and not me, rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellence of our Lord.
It talks about the desert blossoming as a rose and its association with the revelation of the glory of the Lord again. The Lord is going to be transforming that land, and specifically what will happen there. Read down in verses 6 and 7 to kind of see what will happen there.
Then shall the lame man leap as the heart and the tongue of the dumb sing as in the wilderness, shall waters break out of the stream in the desert, and the parched ground shall become a pool. Thirsty man shall spring of water, and the habitation of dragons, each lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes.
So basically, that whole land is going to be transformed. If you look at Israel today, for example, half the land is desert, okay? And that whole place is going to be changed, right?
I always marvel when I go out to Nevada and Vegas, where you see that desert, and it's just nothing.
Right.
And if they water it, the golf courses are just as lush as you can imagine, and around the resorts where they water that land, it's just so beautiful. It's remarkable. So I just kind of, whenever I read this verse, I think about that.
It's a good picture, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly what you can think about.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Now, not only will the land be transformed and changed, obviously the people will be as well. Take a look at Ezekiel chapter 36. And let's look at verses 26 and 27.
The new heart also will I give you, a new spirit within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and ye shall keep my judgments and do them.
So they will have a new heart. They will spontaneously do the will of the Lord from the heart, something that is totally foreign to them at this time. And if you go to the next chapter, 37, Verses 22 through 24, you kind of read the same thing. So somebody want to read those verses as well? Chapter 37, 22 through 24. See that? I mean, the kingdom was split because of Solomon's idolatry, basically. And he was, of course, the one that was a type of Christ in terms of the glory of that kingdom. And he sinned, and the kingdom was split. And so when the true Messiah returns, that kingdom will be reunited and whole again, and their transgressions will be forever a thing of the past. And again, they will be spontaneously doing the will of the Lord, as it says.
No. It's actually, the Lord has to.
Right.
Kind of like a they're going to do this.
Right. They're going to be remade just like the land will be remade. Now, one other thing, very interesting, is if you look in Isaiah chapter 11, verses 6 through 9, and speaking about the actual animal creation that will be in that land, they will also undergo a transformation. Isaiah chapter 11, verses 6 through 9, what do we read there? Did you read down through verse 9?
Yeah. The nursing child shall play with cobra's hole, and the little child shall put his hand in the viper's bed, and they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. So the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea.
You see, now one particular phrase there that's worth noting is the fact that they will not hurt or destroy where? In my holy mountain. That's going to be Israel. It will be uniquely true of Israel in the millennium. Okay? There's not going to be any doubt as to who's being blessed. Okay? In that kingdom. That again is repeated. Look at Isaiah chapter 65, verse 25. Isaiah 65, verse 25. In the millennium, it's only the nation of Israel. That's correct.
So the other nations will still be...
Yeah, their blessing is going to be conditional upon them joining that Abrahamic covenant. Okay? Look at verse 25 in Isaiah 65.
The wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like a bull. And thus shall be the serpent's meat. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, saith the Lord.
Only in his holy mountain, Israel is in view here in terms of the animal creation being transformed, okay, in the millennium. Very important to understand that. Now, as far as the nations themselves, okay, they are going to be required participants in one particular feast, and it's going to be the Feast of Tabernacles. Because, and take a look at that in Zechariah chapter 14. And then we're going to give the reason why that particular feast. Zechariah chapter 14, verses 16 through 19. Actually, you can read down to verse 21.
Zechariah 14.
Yeah.
16 through 21.
Right.
And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not, they have no rain. Thus shall be the plague, wherewith the Lord will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all nations that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. In that day shall there be upon the bowels of the horses holiness unto the Lord, and the pots in the Lord's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts, and all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and seethe therein. And in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts.
Okay, so you see, and there, you know, to Ken's point, basically, the blessing is conditional, right? They're going to have to be partaking, particularly of the Feast of Tabernacles, because the Feast of Tabernacles is the feast that commemorates it's the initiation of the kingdom. Okay? Come over to Daniel chapter 12. Yes, they will get into their full inheritance. Daniel chapter 12, and this is by way of review from what we did before, but you remember we talked about the time schedule, particularly as it related to the second half of the trib, and there's two different countings of the days there. Daniel chapter 12, verses 12 through 13, somebody read that. Right. And then there was a period of 1290 days in verse 11, I believe it was. Okay? And they both start from the beginning of the midpoint. Okay? When that daily sacrifice gets taken away, there's an interruption of the daily sacrifices for 30 days. There's a 30-day midpoint there. And then the 1260, you get to 1290, which is the end of the trib. And then there's that 45-day period where all the full feasts are going to be literally fulfilled to the day concerning the second coming, right? We saw that. And Tabernacles is on the 45th day. Okay, it's the 15th day of the 7th month. Remember that 45 days consists of the 6th month, that 30 days there, which is called Teshuvah. We talked about that, the time of repentance. Then there was Rosh Hashanah, the first day of the 7th month. The 10th day was Yom Kippur, right, the atonement. And then the 15th day is Tabernacles, 45 days. The 45th day, that's the start of the kingdom. If you make it to the 1,335 days, the 1290 plus the 45, you're pronounced what? Blessed, because you go into that kingdom. Okay? And and if you didn't get it all out of the first shot right here, then you'll get it when we go through the book of Daniel. So kind of tip the hand at what we're doing next. But anyway, so being the case, let's focus in on the Gentiles and the fact that they are going to have to be participants in the Feast of Tabernacles. And particularly, you know, the Feast of Tabernacles, there were a lot of sacrifices that could offer, that get offered there during that feast. And the Gentiles that attached themselves to the Abrahamic covenant will also be accepted in terms of their sacrifices and their worship. Let's take a look at Zechariah chapter 8, verses 22 and 23. Zechariah chapter 8, verses 22 and 23. Somebody want to read that? You see that? There's not going to be any doubt as to the fact of who's being blessed. They're going to see it. Remember, Israel's land will be transformed. The animal creation will be transformed. The people will be transformed. They will know whom God is blessing, and they will want that. And they will take hold of the scripture, and they will go. And this will actually be the fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant in the millennium, right? What was the covenant back in Genesis chapter 12? All the families in your seed, the nations of the earth will be blessed, right? This is the realization of that. Now come over to Isaiah chapter 55 and see that in operation. Isaiah 56, verses 6 and 7.
themselves to the Lord to serve him and to love the name of the Lord, to be his servants. Everyone who keepeth the Sabbath from polluting it and taketh hold of my covenant, even them will I bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices shall be accepted upon mine altar, for my house shall be called a house of prayer for all people.
You see that? This is going to be the reality when they join to Israel and take hold of that covenant. The Lord will honor their sacrifices just like he honored Israel's sacrifices. Okay? And it says his house will be a house of prayer for what? All peoples, right? That's what we'll obtain in the millennium. Now, concerning the actual way that tabernacles was celebrated in the Old Testament, if you look at Numbers chapter 29, but don't go there, just make a reference to it because we don't have time to look at all these verses. But Numbers chapter 29, verses 12 through 35, if you count all the offerings that are offered during that 7-day span, there are 70 bulls that are sacrificed. 70. And why is 70 significant? Well, take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 32. Keep in mind when we're talking about the nations actually partaking of that covenant. Deuteronomy chapter 32, verses 7 through 9.
Remember the days of old, consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee. When the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. For the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob is the lot of his inheritance.
He set the bounds of the nation. He actually set their number according to the number of the children of Israel. How many people went down with Jacob, whose name was Israel, went down to Egypt? Come over to Exodus chapter 1, verses 1 and 5. Exodus chapter 1. Verses 1 and 5. Something very interesting there. Exodus chapter 1, verses 1 and 5.
Now these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt. Every man in his household came with Jacob.
And how many were there in verse 5?
And all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls, for Joseph was in Egypt already.
70 souls. See that? The number 70. God set the number of the nations according to the number that went down of Jacob's seed into Egypt and came out of that fiery furnace. He set their bounds ahead of time when he divided the sons of Adam. When did he divide the sons of Adam? Genesis chapter 10, verse 25. What does it say? 10:25. I think so. Either that or verse 32. I think it's Genesis 10. Verse 32, I believe it is.
These are the families of the sons of Noah after the generation in their nations. And by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood.
So after the flood, the nations were divided. And I think there's a reference in Genesis 10. It says it was in the days of Peleg that the earth was divided. Okay? And if you count up all the nations in chapter 10, what number do you come up with? 70, the same number of the children of Israel that went down to Egypt. So God not only knew how many of the Jacob's seed would go down to that land, he set the number of the nations ahead of time according to that number, and they set their bounds, and they await the emergence of that royal nation to come out. You see? Very interesting. The nations that will finally be in the millennium and will be participants, there'll be 70 nations. When that nation finally comes into that millennial glory, and they will be that royal nation, there will be 70 nations. It won't be like it is today.
Out of 270 nations in the world today, that's a pretty small margin.
That's right. There's going to be a lot of redistricting. But that's the problem. prophecy, because Deuteronomy chapter 32, if you look at that whole chapter, it's all about the second coming of Christ. Okay, that's called the Song of Moses, basically. And that's the reference in Revelation, talking about the Song of Moses, Song of the Lamb. Because God's basically, in Deuteronomy 32, that's one of the four chapters in the Old Testament where God basically details all of Israel's history with the view of their climax, in terms of when it's, everything will be fulfilled. Okay?
Will those nations physically stay in their own locale, or will those physical nations move into the locality of the...
No, they'll be in their own locale, but their number and their boundaries are according to the number of the seed of Jacob, which was 70 that went into Egypt. Now,
so it could be global that this kingdom is going to be, or these people will be blessed on a global basis, even though the temple is going to be in Israel.
Oh yeah, I mean the kingdom will be universal. Okay, now. Something else about the Feast of Tabernacles that may not at first glance be obvious, but something was supposed to occur every 7 years during the Feast of Tabernacles. Come over to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 10 and 11. Yeah, I was looking for the verse. I don't know if I have the actual right reference there. But there's supposed to be one place where they actually... 30 verses 10 and 11. Yeah. But there's one that... Hey, this is...
Chapter 31, maybe?
Let's see. Did I mess it up?
There's a 7 years.
That's what I meant. You see that? Yeah, I always do. I'm a little dyslexic or something. Yeah, but the thing is, but that's what it is. Yeah, at the end of what? Every 7 years, right? 31 verse 11.
10.
10 and 11.
And Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, in the solemnity of the year of release, in the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel was come to appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose, thou shalt read this law before all Israel in the hearing.
You see, every 7 years they were supposed to, and because there were three feasts when all Israel was supposed to appear before the Lord, right? Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. Okay, and at the end of 7 years. At the time of the Feast of Tabernacles, the whole law was supposed to be read in every Jew's hearing. Okay, and it talks about the fact that it's every 7 years is very interesting because that coincides basically with the Sabbath of the land. Take a look at Leviticus chapter 25. Yeah, well, I mean, it's something that's added in italics sometimes is necessary for the understanding.
There's so much of prophecy that has a dual fulfillment, dual application. And I always thought, too, that the end of 7 years, we're talking about something that coincides with the millennial kingdom.
Right.
Isn't that also a picture of the end of the tribulation as well?
Right. Well, if you remember when we started out the series, right, the number 7 is the number of completion. Yes. And all the way through. I mean, Tabernacles is the seventh feast. It's in the seventh month, right?
And so you see all of that fulfilled at the end of those 7 years.
Correct. But come over and look at Leviticus chapter 25, verses 2 to 5. Because the 7 years, basically, is a reference to the Sabbath of the land, okay? In other words, when the land was supposed to have its rest, it was also a time for Israel to rehearse all the law. Okay? Well, take a look. Let somebody read verses 2 to 5.
Speak to the children of Israel and say unto them, when you come into the land which I gave you, then shall the land shall thou sow the field, and in 6 years thou shalt prune the vineyards, and gather in the fruits thereof. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. Thou shalt neither sow thy fields, nor prune thy vineyards. That which groweth of it on the court of the harvest, thou shalt not reap, neither gather the grapes of thy vines undressed, for it is a year of rest unto the land. And the Sabbath of the land shall be meet for you, for thee, and for thy servants, and for the maid, and for the hired servants, and for the strangers that cometh with thee.
Okay. So you see, every seventh year, the land was supposed to rest. And along with that, the end of every 7 years, Israel was to rehearse the entire law, okay, in each person's hearing. Now, Israel never really kept the Sabbath of the land. In fact, basically, one of the reasons why they were finally driven into Babylon was because the land would have our Sabbaths, according to 2 Chronicles, okay, 36. We saw that at one point. But not only did they not keep the Sabbath of the land, but they never really, in terms of, particularly the Feast of Tabernacles, which is the only feast, really, that there was supposed to be, it was supposed to be the rejoicing of the people after the accomplished redemption, after the atonement, which was the sixth feast, right? And they were supposed to have true fellowship with the Lord. And they never really experienced that. Even from the time that they came into the land of Joshua, take a look at Nehemiah chapter 8.
Just one question. So this Sabbath of the land and that 7 years of reading, the seventh year of reading the Bible, was that the same year then?
Yes. It was at the end of the Sabbath of the land. Nehemiah chapter 8, verses 14 through 18. You see, this was a rare event. It should have been something that was a regular occurrence, right? But Israel as a nation did not follow that, okay? When we talked about the fact of them making these booths and sitting, it was the idea to commemorate the fact that God was always present in every one of their goings in the wilderness journey. He was always with them. They saw that in the pillar of fire by night and in the cloud by day, right? And he accompanied them in every turn. And they were supposed to commemorate that, and they never did. And also, as far as the, and it probably by also in it, being that they didn't do that, is very much probable that they also didn't do the thing about doing the reading of the law every 7 years like they were supposed to. Because they make a point here in verse 18 that they actually read the law for, 7 days of that feast, the whole length of that feast. And there was great joy. And really, when you look at the returning of the exiles, it is kind of a faint type of what Israel one day again experienced in the millennium. Okay? And so, because in the millennium, this word of the law and this disseminating of the word to the hearing of all, that's going to have a total, complete fulfillment in the Messianic kingdom. Come over to Isaiah chapter 2, verse 3. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 3. And we're just about down toward the end here. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 3.
Many people shall go and say, come ye and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem.
You see that? The word of the Lord will go forth from Jerusalem. The nations will be wanting to be hearing and being taught his ways. And we just read that other verse in chapter 11, verse 9, where when that happens, it says that the knowledge of the Lord will cover the earth, will fill the earth as the waters cover what? The sea. In other words, there won't be anywhere where that word won't be known, right? And that's Isaiah 11, verse 9. And on that, we'll conclude.